Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and a very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. Joe at RTE.ie. Maureen Ryan. Maureen, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
I know you're living in Cork, but you are an American. Your reaction to what we've all been witnessing and what happened over the weekend?
Well, I suppose shock to begin with, Joe, but also I suppose heartbreak in a way, because I just can't believe that's my country. You know, and I know President Biden came out and said, you know, this is not America, but unfortunately, it's more like it's more America than it has ever been. And it's not about the assassination attempt. It's more about the whole, even what Trump did afterwards, or ex-President Trump, you know, when he put his hand up and said, fight, 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 in the middle, surrounded by Secret Service people who were trying to protect him. And he put his head up twice. So it was, it's not so much about him. It's about the whole reaction the country has had, about the anger, the talk of civil war, the whole real visceral hatred almost between the parties at the moment is just so, and between not just the parties, between Americans for each other, because they're on a different side of the political fence. So it's just really unbelievable to me.
And have you ever seen it as bad? Because people are making analogies with 1968 and Chicago and that whole the year of the assassinations. And thankfully, this was an unsuccessful assassination attempt, thankfully. Maureen, have you seen it as polarized?
Oh, never. Never. I mean, I grew up in Chicago. I lived in Chicago full time until I was 25. And I went back for 6 years, then again later. And I mean, I've never, ever remember. My grandfather was a Democrat, but he had friends that were Republicans. He went out and supported the Democratic Party in elections and everything. And I worked for them for a while. But it's just never, never, I've never seen this. And even it's, you know, I know friends who have been, who have been Democrats before or Republicans, but now some of them won't even talk to each other. You know, it's just never, I've never seen it like this before, ever.
Americans won't talk to American neighbors because of their politics.
No. And I mean, Joe, we're talking about a civil war. You talk about 1968. Like, you know, I mean, look what happened back in the 1700s or 1800s when we had the Civil War. It's not that long ago when you think about it. And it's not just around the politics. It's around, like, in where I come from in Chicago, we have huge gangland stuff. But this is really about feeling the same way, people feeling the same way, talking really with visceral hatred of other people who they've known all their lives. You know, I mean, it's not something that I've never really heard them talk about civil war so much as I have heard this weekend. People afraid of a civil war. Okay. I want my family. I have family living in Chicago. I'm the eldest of nine, and the rest of them are all in Chicago, and I have family, and I would like them to move back to Ireland to be with me, because I'm really worried and frightened for them.
And have you said that to them, Maureen?
I haven't, because I didn't really believe it until this weekend. Yeah. You know, I haven't talked to any of them because I've been glued to the television like probably they were. But it's the sort of thing that it's like, you know, it's just unbelievable. And I mean, really, I don't, in my opinion, neither man should be running for president, you know, and it's not just because of their age. I think both are sick in their own way. You know, I don't think either man should be a president, because I would be very worried. And I have to say, I am a Democrat, and I would be very frightened for the country if President Trump were to be reelected. I think, you know, he would, that what he did yesterday, even, or the day before, was, you know, didn't help the situation. I mean, most people who that happens to are in shock. And on top of it, he was surrounded by seven or eight people who are ready to put their lives on the line to protect him, and he still put his head above the parapet twice they could have been shot, or he could have been shot again. Now, I know they waited until the shooter was down, but they only knew there was one shooter there at that time. You know, there could have been other shooters. So, you know, it's just been incredible. The whole situation was incredible.
Okay. Stay with us, Maureen, please.
Thank you.
It's Joe with RT.ie, 0818 715 815. But on the day that's in it, Joe at RT.ie is the email, especially for any of our American listeners. Now, I want to go to John David Longo, who's mayor of Slippery Rock in Butler County in Pennsylvania. And John was very close to the tragedy that could have unfolded and thankfully didn't. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon to you, sir. Thank you for having me on.
Okay, there'll be a delay on the line. John, first of all, condolences. I know the man who died was Corey Comparatore, the volunteer fire chief, who was very, very well respected in the community. Did you know Corey, John?
I can't say that I had the honor of knowing Corey, but I didn't know him personally. I knew of him because we have such a great spirit of volunteerism in Butler County, in particular with the volunteer fire service and EMS EMT service. So his reputation preceded him as a hero even before his life was stolen from him by this monster.
And John David, you were quite close to President Trump when this tragedy unfolded. Can you tell us what you remember and what happened?
I was you know, at the time, what I thought was blessed to have been seated in the very front row, left of stage, with the other speakers at the rally that day. I had participated in the pre-program and leading the rally and the pledge and saying a few words. It was a day that was joyous. Everyone was elated. Everyone was smiling. There was unity there. It was a feeling of good hope. Moving forward a little bit, my wife and I went backstage, and I had the pleasure of having a conversation with the president about 15 minutes before these shots were taken at him and at the rally goers. We talked about what's going on in Butler County. He complimented me on my speech, saying that he had watched it on the end. And, of course, you know, again, my wife and I were elated. I remember leaving the conversation telling him, you know, Mr. President, Butler County is going to deliver Pennsylvania for you. We're gonna get you back to the White House, sir. We're gonna work as hard as we can. And from there, we, you know, went back to our seats. Now, this is where things are strange because
John David, bear with us because such is the importance of what you're saying. We just want to try and establish a better line. Stay with us, John David Longo, Mayor of Slippery Rock, and I'll come back. I want to go back to you, Maureen, for a second, and especially the I don't know whether you saw the statement from Melania Trump, which was a very conciliatory statement. I don't know whether you've managed to read it, but she talked about we are humans, that love must conquer above this violence. We've always been a unique union. America, the fabric of our gentle nation, is tattered, but our courage and common sense must ascend and bring us back together as one. Let us not forget that different opinions, policy and political games are inferior to love. Our personal, structural and life commitment until death is at serious risk. Political concepts are simple when compared to us human beings. We are all humans and fundamentally, instinctively, we want to help one another. American politics are only one vehicle that can uplift our communities. Love, compassion, kindness and empathy are necessities. And let us remember that when the time comes to look beyond the left and the right, beyond the red and the blue, we all come from families with the passion to fight for a better life together while we are here in this earthly realm. Dawn is here again. Let us reunite now. This morning, ascend above the hate, the vitriol, the simple-minded ideas that ignite violence. We all want a world where respect is paramount, family is first, love transcends. We can realise this world again. Each of us must demand to get it back. We must insist that respect fills the cornerstone of our relationships again. I am thinking of you, my fellow Americans. The winds of change have arrived. For those of you who cry in support, I thank you. I commend those of you who've reached out beyond the political divide. Thank you for remembering that every single politician is a man or a woman with a loving family. Now, if I had not told you at the start, Maureen, that that was a statement from Melania Trump, it's a very powerful statement. I think people would have thought it was from, I was reading an old speech by Martin Luther King or Barack Obama.
Yeah.
It's a very conciliatory.
Yeah, it is. And I mean, thank God that a woman who's very closely connected to the political, you know, thing, but at the same time has stayed completely out of it for this election. She has not appeared at really a rare few of his ex-President Trump's rallies, because it's been, and that makes sense to me. That's what I would understand America to be. Like, people didn't go around saying, you know, I know, Joe, even in Ireland, there was a time when there was, you know, people were called blue shirts or, you know, the other, yeah, whatever, you know, and there was that divide there. But I mean, this has been going on now, you know, for a long, long time. You know, I grew up in the States in the 60s and the 70s and moved back to Ireland in 1980 to my grandmother in North Kerry. And I planned on only staying a year, but something kept me here. And my point is that, but I've always stayed interested in politics because I, first of all, I work in social work. So I kind of, you know, I'm interested in how political things work and how they affect people. And the thing is that it's just been so visceral, as I say, so ugly between people.
Well, Maureen,
such long.
Do you think, and especially in light of what Melania Trump has the former First Lady has said in her statement, and the tone of it, and the sense it makes, and the formula of words, which are obviously very, 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 very gently chiseled, and put a lot of work into it. Do you think this might mellow her husband in terms of his vitriol? I don't know. I presume a lot of when Donald Trump says, I'm going to
shoot. You expect a lot.
Well, he says, shoot shoplifters dead. Is that maybe all of that is just guff? When he says, when he mocked Nancy Pelosi over the fact, crazy Nancy, as he called her, over the fact that her husband was savagely attacked and the wall she built around her house obviously wasn't big enough like the wall he's building. Maybe this is just guff and he will mellow.
Yeah, maybe January 6th didn't happen. You know, I mean, like, Joe, that for me was... Mm-hmm. Like that, I suppose if I was honest with you, Joe, that happenstance, that insanity, like, really showed me how America changed. I really didn't believe it because I go home, you know, probably once every, maybe the last few years, every year, and then maybe every other year before that or every 3 years. And I mean, America seemed like America. I was focused on my family and everything. Now I have to say, I, you know, there was a lot of ugly talk I felt coming out of the White House when somebody was president, you know, and then that seems to have mellowed. But now even the Democrats have picked it up, you know, and it's like tit for tat, you know, back and forth, who can say the worst things. And it's the sort of thing now, Joe, that, I mean, January 6th just showed me that there was a dark underbelly in America that would love to bring down the systems that have worked for 200 plus years, you know. And I was home when we celebrated our 200th anniversary, and I knew all the people. I mean, people, like, you hear about immigration now, Joe. You know, we Irish sit back and think, like, that's not going to affect us, but it does affect us. And I had an Irishman who worked illegally in America for 7 years, 3 summers ago, tell me that he didn't want those immigrants coming across the border because they could kill his wife or kids. And I looked at him and I said, you're an immigrant. My father was an immigrant. My grandparents are all immigrants. I said, America is made up of immigrants. You know, like, what are you talking about? Like, you know, and it's just unbelievable. I can't believe, like, I grew up in a neighborhood of Italians and Greeks and Irish, you know, and like, you got along. You didn't, I mean, there might be comments, like little things, you know, like the patties and the dagos and, you know, the greasy Greeks and things like that. But it wasn't visceral. It was just the comment, you know. And I mean, you know, it was not this kind of you know, don't talk to them or you know who they are. And I mean, in Chicago, it's not as bad as in other parts of the country. It's not as bad because you have a city.
Okay, Maureen, again, I give out the email for our listeners in the United States, joe@rt.ie, which is the way Ronan Sugru has contacted us from North Carolina. Ronan, good afternoon. Your contribution, please.
Hi, Joe. Yeah. Yeah, I'm in North Carolina. I've been here for 3 years and was in Boston for 5 years before that. Obviously, the weekend's events, terrible. But I think what I wanted to mention was just how surprised I was by my neighbors' reactions. Where I live is a very liberal, progressive area. People would not be Trump fans at all, and I would agree with them personally. But they were very excited that he'd been shot, and they were genuinely and openly disappointed that he hadn't been killed.
Oh,
and
gosh.
That, to me, is something that I personally can't get behind and find very disturbing. And I think it does probably speak a little bit to what Maureen was saying about how polarized things have become. You know, in Ireland, we often think that's just kind of the right-wing conservative Republican side of things. But in the last few years, you know, the folks on the left too, even if you might agree with their politics, the way they go about it and the way they talk about it now is really disturbing. And I don't think words like civil war should be put about lightly, but I don't think they're far-fetched either, you know.
So you were shocked by the reaction of so-called, well, liberals and people who are anti-Trump couldn't see beyond the horror that might have unfolded, even for Donald Trump and his family and his wife and his son, Barron, and his other children as well. They couldn't see beyond the tragedy that might have unfolded, and they said it's a pity the shooter missed.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, I'm not going to say this is the majority of people.
Yeah, I don't understand.
But it's several people that I've been chatting to over the weekend, you know, educated people and smart, you know, very good people. But to think that they've got to the point where they would want a man, you know, murdered is really, really hard to understand. Yeah.
Say with us, Ron. I'm going back to John David Longo, Mayor of Slippery Rock. John David, you're back again. Hopefully a better line. Just back to what unfolded that you said 15 minutes before this horror. The president was, you were talking to him. Then you took your seats. What happened next, John David?
Yes, right. So the president came out from backstage just 15 minutes after having met him. He was taking the stage, and again, you know, it was just a feeling of joy. There's a point in a video that my wife and my mother-in-law took where the president recognized me again, and he tilts his head, he points at me into the podium, he says, "Great job." So again, you know, we're just enjoying the experience. We're getting looking forward to hearing President Trump give his message, and then of course the shots ring out, and where can I start? The first one I heard, and you know, to be quite honest with you, as a Marine and somebody who went to a place like Afghanistan, and being an infantry rifleman, I understand what gunfire sounds like. I know what small caliber rounds sound like, and so you know, my ear immediately recognized that sound. But I never would have imagined or guessed that with all of the great security measures that go into a rally like this, and especially for one. For a president or a former president of the United States, that sound was gunfire. But shots rang out in quick succession after that first one that let me know that my worst fear was a reality. So it was at that time I asked my wife, I shoved my wife to the ground, and I covered myself, covered her with myself. And while doing that, I was scanning the crowd around me, immediately behind me, because I knew that the fire was coming from behind me. I just wasn't sure if it was from within the venue. So once I realized that nobody was in the venue with a gun next to us, I was you know, of course, yelling at that time for everybody else around me to get down and stay low.
Okay.
And scanning the crowd. My eyes kept going back to President Trump, of course, with my head over the barrier, because I was You know, I wanted to know if we had just lost President Trump, and I watched the Secret Service pounce on top of him to protect him with his protect him with their bodies. I watched them bring him back up after what I was guessing was the end of the threat that it had been neutralized. And I saw him wrangle his arms and his head from the Secret Service to peer his head out from the huddle of Secret Service members and his fist to raise in what I can only describe as triumphant defiance to this gunman to let everybody know there that he was still with us. But it was also simultaneously that we realized that Fire Chief Corey Comfortori had lost his life immediately behind us in the bleachers. And that was just it was awful, of course, to have seen and witnessed. Everybody was in shock, of course, from that moment. What ensued after that was an effort to try to keep everybody calm in my general vicinity, and especially telling folks to not shove and not stampede over one another while trying to evacuate, because my fear was that they were going to step on and run over the individuals who were still laying on the ground. And the last thing, of course, that we needed was more injury or, God forbid, another death. Yeah. What I did after that was I just making sure that my family was safe. I had my father-in-law go with them to our vehicles, and I stuck around to help in any way I could with the emergency and first responders there on the ground.
And John David, you were now in Milwaukee. You're Milwaukee. You're down at the RNC, the Republican National Convention. What would be the reaction when President Trump speaks?
Well, I think we can all agree that it's going to be inspirational to see the man speak, and that would be, you know, I would hope for anybody, whether you're Democrat or Republican, American or not, to see this man having experienced and gone through something like that so recently, and then to be on stage in front of a crowd, again, speaking in that fashion, surely it's hard to wrap your mind around, because the fact is he was looking over his right shoulder to his right, you know, in our direction. He was referring to a screen behind us. If he hadn't done that and gone off script and turned his head in that way, President Donald J. Trump would not be with us right now. And again, you know, just the simple fact that he's alive and breathing right now is amazing in and of itself. But I think that everybody in the nation, in the world, is looking for a message of hope right now from President Trump, and is looking to be inspired to be better and to unify in this moment.
And when President Trump said, "God alone prevented my assassination,"
I couldn't agree more, sir. But again, it's a strange feeling to feel relief. Again, you know, that the president is alive, that all these other folks who were at the rally are alive, but then also knowing, of course, that Fire Chief Corey Comfortori is no longer with us, and then there are individuals who are very seriously injured. But but it is seemingly an act of God that President Trump had moved his head in the way that he did. I mean, it was just incredible to see firsthand, because I watched the president grab his ear. I was that close. I saw the blood on the side of his face. I can't explain it in any other terms other than the hand of God intervened in that moment.
But unfortunately, Corey Comfortori was murdered by the same bullet.
So sad. So again, a mix of emotions there. It's hard to reconcile with the feelings of relief, while also feeling that sadness, that anger for the injury and the loss of life that occurred.
And John David, did you ever think, both as a person, as someone who gave service to his country, and as a mayor of your town, did you ever think that something like this could happen?
You know, I've seen a lot of ugly in this world, sir, and I've seen it all over the place. I've seen some ugly in my own country, in the United States of America. But for the most part, we often feel safe as Americans. I don't care what the narrative might be outside. The truth of the matter is, especially in places like Butler County, that is quintessential small town USA territory. So, no, it's very hard for us to understand how something like this could have happened in Butler County, where President Trump has been adored since 2015, when he came down the golden escalators to, you know, make his announcement that he was running. I just, you know, never would have thought that something like this could happen in our backyard. And I'm just so sad that it's the reason why Butler County is on the lips of everyone in the world right now.
And John David, do you think it might change President Trump?
Well, I think anything like this would change anyone. You know, I think what we need to remember too is that Donald J. Trump is a human being, like you and I. He has thoughts and feelings. He has family and loved ones who care about him and who he cares about deeply. And you know, we need to remember that he's going to go through the range of human emotions like the rest of us. But what separates President Trump from many of us is that he's been living in this world now for a long time, and he's experienced a lot of adversity and challenge, especially since entering into the fires of politics. You know, we already thought he was a strong man to begin with, but he showed us who he was in that moment, that he in fact is a strong leader, and that he's you know, willing to stand there and take the blows, quite literally. At this point, we can say.
And John David, you said when the president came back up and he fought his way, so to speak, through the phalanx of Secret Service agents, and he raised his fists in the air. Did you hear what he actually said when he raised his fists in the air?
You know, I couldn't hear what he was saying, but I could see his mouth moving. And the reason being is because there was a considerable amount of wailing and crying in my immediate vicinity. You have to remember that just 15 feet behind me, the bleachers were screaming because Fire Chief Corey Comfortori had lost his life. I couldn't quite hear, but looking at that footage afterward from the front angle with President Trump, I thought I saw him say, fight, fight. I heard everybody too, I should mention too, everybody started screaming and chanting USA, USA when the president stood up.
Well, your fellow American who lives, and there's many of them on the line at the minute, but Maureen Ryan, who's on, who's now based in Cork in Ireland, she felt it was dangerous for President Trump to come back up like that and raise his fist, and she didn't like his use of those words by coming back up above the parapet. As she said, he was placing his own life and other lives in danger. How do you see that, John David?
Well, I think that this is twofold. First of all, I think that many folks on the left side of the aisle who are against President Trump and his movement are upset that in that moment, cameras were able to capture his strength. And so obviously that strength is very dangerous to an opposing campaign. And second, I would just ask anybody else to put themselves in that moment and in those shoes and think as to whether or not they were going to want to project strength or weakness in that moment. And what Donald J. Trump gave us was a symbol of strength, and it was a symbol of hope for everybody in that crowd. You have to remember, everybody there with him experienced that together. So for him to have gone out of that stadium or that venue crying or whining or anything like that would have been to the detriment of the people who had just experienced that trauma with him. So I give all of the credit in the world to President Trump for having shown us strength in that moment, because it gave us a moment of reprieve in a moment of horror.
Maureen, you're listening to John David, Maureen Ryan, who's from Chicago. Maureen, John David saying it's only people on the other side of the aisle, so to speak, who object to President Trump's his fist in the air saying fight, fight, fight.
I said earlier, Joe, I'm a social worker, and I am thinking, I'm looking at the whole picture there. I was thinking of President Trump. First of all, I'm not on any side of an aisle. I'm an American, and that's what I'm thinking of at this moment, America. And I vote in every election. So I'm here and I'm saying that my concern was, first of all, any president needs to, the Secret Service are there to protect him. And everyone is saying they did a great job, maybe except for realizing that there could be a place where a shooter could get to him. But the thing is that their job is to get him out of there, that scene, and into the vehicle to protect him. And that's their job. And it would be his role to cooperate with them, to be protected by them. And I would think that anyone in the crowd there would want that for him, and not to think that he needed to show anything other than concern for himself and for the people around him and for his family, as you mentioned, Joe, and John David mentioned, his family, the thinking that they're watching him on television. And Melania and Barron and all the other adult children were all watching him and were afraid for him. So I think the most thing that I would want, if anyone, and it's not about being brave or being, strong or being weak. It's about being sensible, and it's about saying sensible things and appearing to be a leader for the country. And it's not about, I'm not here about putting down President Trump. He's been through a trauma. I mean, his blood was pouring down the side of his face. The pictures were very evident. And like John David said, I mean, I could see that. If he hadn't turned his head in that moment, he would have been dead. And how many others? Yeah. So, I mean, it's not something about, again, not mentioning the fact that he mentions that I'm on the other side of the aisle. It just shows you the divide, that it's us or them. It's not us or them, it's us.
Well, ma'am, with respect, you did identify yourself as a Democrat, so...
But that doesn't make me not an American or against a Republican.
I didn't say that, and I would ask you to please not to interrupt me so that I can just say, you're the one that said, I'm a Democrat, and I don't want President Trump to be president of the United States. So you drew that divide in this moment. So to come back at me to say that I was wrong to make that mark and say, well, look, they've just, mentioned that they don't like this. They are a Democrat. They're against Trump. So that's one. Two, I think that you're trying to apply the rules for regular civilians to somebody who served as a leader of the free world. He has a responsibility as a leader, as you mentioned, to inspire those around him and to motivate those around him. For a leader who wants to be the commander-in-chief of the United States Armed Forces and the leader of the free world to show weakness in a moment like that, instead of inspiring everyone around him who had just experienced that horror, would have been irresponsible on his part. So he stood up, and he stepped up to the plate when it mattered most.
Ronan Sugru, Ronan, I know you've been living in the States now for a good few years. Would that alter your plans about returning to Ireland, if at all?
I mean, not really, only in that we'd already planned to come back to Ireland. But I would say, in terms of how long we were going to spend in the States, definitely... gun violence in general would have contributed to us leaving earlier rather than later. I mean, we have three young kids. We hugely enjoyed our time here. We came in 2016 when Obama was still president, and country's changed quite a bit since then. But I think, having kids and seeing them kind of having to go through active shooter drills in school and, my wife's workplace being locked down a couple of times because of a shooter on campus. It's very hard to imagine raising your kids here. And obviously, look, I'm biased in the sense that Ireland's home and family's there and all that. But I think it's very interesting that there's a lot of Americans, again, regardless of political view, a lot of Americans I chat to who talk pretty seriously about, what would it be like to live in another country now? When we first arrived here, people here still believe that the U.S. was, quote-unquote, the greatest country in the world. I'm not sure that the rest of the world necessarily believed that, but Americans did. But I think in the last 3 years in particular, particularly since January 6, 2021, it's very interesting that politicians aside, city mayors aside, there's very few people saying that it's the greatest country in the world anymore. It doesn't matter whether it's the local mechanic or... the person, in the shop, whatever, it doesn't matter what their view is. Most people will say now, oh, you're from Ireland. Why are you here? Why would you be here? This is crazy, a crazy place to be. But and that's a big change.
Yeah, but then, I don't know what age your children are, Ronan, but this man, Crooks, who the failed assassin, though he did murder that brave citizen, Corey Compertori, and seriously injured two others. But he was 20, so that meant he could buy the gun. The gun, the rifle he had was legally held. Could have had three of them if he wanted. But he couldn't buy a pint in a pub.
Yeah, it's been talked about so much. It's beyond comprehension, obviously. You know, where I live, there are gun shows and gun markets, readily available. That's a 4-hour conversation. I mean, it's crazy that that's the case. I think that the whole world sees that. I don't know what to say about that.
Okay. Ronan, thanks indeed. Joe at RT.ie, especially if you're a listener in the United States of America. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. By the way, when people refer to President Trump, that is the American protocol. President Obama, once a president, you are forever referred to as a president, including by the current president in residence in the White House. That is the American protocol. So it's not a statement of opinion by different people who call him President Trump or President Obama or President Clinton or President Bush or indeed the great, 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 great President Carter, who's thankfully still with us in his 100th year. Chris, good afternoon. Joe at RT.ie. Your contribution, please, Chris.
Hi, Joe. I have to say I agree with everything that the woman who was on earlier, I didn't get her name.
Maureen, yes.
Maureen. She was a rock of sense because this country is so divided. I've lived in Ireland 50 years, but I go home back regularly, and I still got my American passport, and I'm just so upset with what is going on there. It's so divided.
Mm-hmm. And could you see the difference in attitude in the last few years, Chris?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Okay. 100%. It has got so incredibly, I don't even know the word for it. It's so aggressive and so, I mean, I've got all my friends in America still, and I've got all my friends here, but they are frightened. I mean, in the last few months alone, the whole tone has changed. I talk to them regularly, and they're terrified.
And they're terrified of what, Chris, do you think?
They're terrified of Trump getting in. And because most of, I would be a Democrat, and most of my friends would be. But it's just the way he goes on, and he's a loose cannon. And I am so fearful for that country and I'm fearful for I'm fearful for here too, when he gets in.
And what do you think? If I read it out almost in full, I don't have time to read out in full, but it's online. I retweeted actually during one of the breaks. Melania Trump's statement. Which spoke about love and we are all humans fundamentally, instinctively. We want to help each other. It's not.
Yeah, I heard you.
It's
I heard
not
that,
about
yeah.
left and right. It's red and blue. It's about families and our passion to fight for a better life together while we're here in this. What did you think of that statement?
Do you really want to know?
Yes.
Well, I think number one, I think it was written for her. So, and number two, I think if it wasn't written by someone else, then she needs to talk to her husband.
Okay, well, why do you say it was written for? If I had said the statement was issued by Michelle Obama, which it could nearly have been word for word, you wouldn't have said someone wrote it for Michelle Obama.
No, I wouldn't have. But anyway, apart from that, I just think, it's just in the past few, let's say the past 6 months, it has just escalated. And anybody I'm talking to back home is just, they're terrified.
And now, as you heard, most commentators, most academics, most political analysts, we've been listening to them, obviously and appropriately, from 1 o'clock on Sunday morning. They're all saying this is the re-election of Donald Trump, or sorry, the election of Donald Trump confirmed.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. And I think that is one of the most terrifying things.
Why? What will happen? What could happen? What could happen?
What could happen? Everything. Well, he's already talked about the fact he's with Roe v. Wade. He had a big hand in that. He's got a hand in everything. And he's appointed people that he wants. And he's going to just tear America apart. It will not be recognizable.
Is there any hope that this might mellow? Maybe all of this stuff that Trump comes out with, I'm going to shoot shoplifters dead, I'm going to shoot this, shoot that, laughing at Nancy Pelosi's husband being savagely attacked by a man with a hammer who was trying to kill a Nancy Pelosi. Nothing to do with Donald Trump, by the way. But maybe this is just all guff and he'll mellow.
No. I have no hope, and I don't think anybody that I know would disagree. They all feel the same. Everybody that I know in the States, they're terrified.
Okay. Joe, the most important address today, joe@rte.ie, joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe, Artie, we're getting messages about what's happening in Coolock, and if anyone is near the spot where it's the former, a lot of people know, it's beside where Tato used to be, and it's the former Crown Paint factory. It's on the Malahide Road. As far as I'm concerned, it's not in Coolock. It's not in the middle of Glynn Avenue or Macroom Road. It's on the outskirts of Coolock. It faces onto a dual carriageway. It faces onto the cinema complex in Power City across. There's no houses next or near it. In fact, I was up there yesterday and all I could see was bunting and obnoxious posters. But I didn't see any people. But suddenly some people turned up this morning and a security officer is now in hospital, and there's been a number of pieces of equipment being burnt. My people say Coolock says no to international asylum seekers. And then on Saturday, I don't know whether people saw it, it was billed as a national mobilisation against the EU migration pact, a national mobilisation. I'd say there's a few hundred people from the footage I saw in, I don't know how they managed to have it in the Garden of Remembrance under the shadow of our Patriot Day. But anyway, it was in the Garden. Well, it wasn't that you could not under any stretch say it was a national mobilisation. And I just wonder how many people are actually involved in that. That protest on the outskirts of Coolock. It's on the Malahide Road. You could argue it's on the outskirts of Donaghmead, or it's on the outskirts of Clare Hall, or it's on the outskirts of Darndale, but it's not. But if anyone is nearby, you can let us know what's happening. Tommy Bryan, and I'll go to Paddy Griffin, sorry, because Paddy is in New Hampshire in the States, Nashua. Paddy, good afternoon. Your contribution, please.
Yeah, hello, Joe. Well, I'm not sure I have anything original to say about the Trump situation. I think the episode practically seals him winning the next election. You will see a massive surge in donations. I wish I owned the copyright on the photos of him with the fist in the air. And I think the Democrats, it was always a choice between the lesser of two evils. And they've done a horrible job. A friend of mine over the weekend gave me a new phrase, blue MAGA, the way they're sort of turning on each other about whether Biden should stay or go, and their failure to even promote effectively the good things that Biden has actually done during his presidency. And so we have two dysfunctional parties. And I think the one with the momentum right now is the Republican Party. I wish it wasn't, because I think Trump in most ways is a pretty repulsive character. But you do have to hand it to him. If I had just been nicked by a bullet, I'd be on the ground whimpering. And he definitely, you know, wins the image of the year for that. Anyway, that's not sure how that helps the conversation, but that's
my first take on it. It does, very much so, Paddy. It's very, 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 very much so. But it is, Paddy, it is a democracy. Everyone has a vote, I know, because of the nature of the Federation and going back to the Civil War and going back to slavery. But there are checks and balances, and big states are checked over little states, and that manifests itself, well, it manifests itself in the Senate and the House, but also manifests itself in the Electoral College. But it is, the two parties have managed to almost in 50-50, and there have been smaller parties and smaller issues rose, but it's always been down to the two parties. So it is democratic in that sense, and both parties do believe in the democratic process.
Yes, I mean, it's true. Both parties control, as you said, probably around 47% of the population. So it's people like me, I guess, who aren't a member of either party who would make the difference. And I think Biden was already on a path of losing, you know, even before the huge questions about his capabilities and his acuity. You know, concentrating on shooting, the wrong word, on demonizing Trump as opposed to saying what you have done and will do was a big mistake. And some of those prosecutions actually looked so petty and trivial. If you look at, say, the New York case, those charges were like the kind of financial chicanery that would be, you know, typical of the Haughey Lenehan era in Ireland, right? The brown paper bags type of stuff. The other thing is, I think that the other weakness for Biden, and this is my little party piece, if you like, is Israel and Gaza. And I think Biden has failed miserably to control Netanyahu's mass murder. And I think that will cost him, as you said, the Electoral College in big states like Michigan.
Okay, so you're basically saying, Paddy, that Biden has no hope. Let me bring in Tommy Bryan. Tommy, thanks, Paddy Griffin. Tommy, you classify as pro Trump. Your contribution, please, Tommy.
Yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Yeah, I would say, I wouldn't say, to be honest with you, in the very beginning, when he first became president, I wasn't a fan of his. I didn't like his character, but as a president, I thought he did a great job. A lot of people don't, they never take into consideration like the fundamentals of leadership, you know, when it comes to accountability, lead from the front, integrity, that kind of stuff. And he had a lot of them, and that's what I liked about it. And it was evident in his presidency, the price of, you know, he's putting up the pipelines and the price of petrol went down, and unemployment is at a lowest rate. The economy was booming, and, you know, everybody was enjoying themselves, other than the people that hated him or that disliked him. And as far as the comment earlier, that other fella, I can't remember his name, but the former Marine.
Oh, John. John David.
John David. And thank you for his service. Yeah, I believe you said he was an infantryman in the Marines. I served in the U.S. military myself.
Okay.
And he had said, when we're talking about Trump holding up his fist after that, if that was me on that stage and I just caught a bullet in the air, I'd have done a naked jig on that stage. You know what I mean? Like, fair play to him for what he did. Because it's not an easy thing when your life is on the line or something like that happens to you. And the comment as well, would it humble him? I think you were bringing that up. Would it humble him, or would it change his outlook on stuff? And it will. It absolutely will. Once you come that close to death in your life, a lot of things change in your mind. And he has over the years. If you look at him, he was mad on Twitter and all these other things. Back when he was president, and everybody, even on his own side, would bitch about it, and nobody liked it. But he's calmed down on that now, and he doesn't do that as much as he used to. He has humbled himself over the years, and I think that this incident not only will win him the election, I think it will also humble him as well a lot more than what he is.
Okay, but when you look at all the people who served, to use that great word, and Tommy, thank you for your service as well, as Americans say, and do appreciate, more so than most countries, including our own, I hasten to add. But Tommy, anyone that served under Donald Trump, attorney general, security advisors, press, they've all resiled. They've all turned their back on him, almost to a man and a woman, anyone that worked with him.
Yeah, it's difficult to say why that took place. You'd have to be in the inner circles to know what was going on. He used to use the term draining the swamp or cleaning the swamp or something back in the day. Do you remember? And he just started firing people left and right. Now, I'm sure he had a reason for it. I'm sure he gets information that we're not privy to about people that are doing stuff behind his back or whatnot. Who knows?
But it seems to me an awful lot of people that he employed, he praised, he admired, he gave jobs to, and within a relatively short time, they almost without exception, they ran.
Yeah. And it's the same thing. Like, he appointed some of the people on the U.S. Supreme Court. And they ruled against him with the whole election fraud thing. I believe their conclusion was that there was no election fraud. Now, there's a lot of Americans today that still believe that there was. Evidence, if you look at evidence, it's from an investigative standpoint, it's very different than from what's considered evidence in court. It looks like circumstantial in a courtroom, but to a police officer or a detective looking at it, it's something completely different. So,
are you saying there was electoral fraud?
It's difficult to say. I have to go with the Supreme Court's decision because that's what their job is.
Well, not just the Supreme Court, Tommy. In many, many states, the courts of those states have ruled that there wasn't electoral fraud. But anyway,
well, you have to look at it this way. Look at it this way. There's a law in the states that specifically says that the counting of the ballots has to be public, and people were locked out of those, and they weren't allowed. People showed up to vote, and they were told that they had already voted.
Well, all of this has been contested again and again in open court, and every single one of them, I think, without exception, has fallen. But anyway, Tommy, you think that the fallen President Trump on Saturday evening, American time, Sunday, he rose again, and he will rise again in November.
I think the same thing happened with Reagan. His polls or his ratings just went through the roof after the attempt was made on him. And I think the same thing is going to happen with Trump. I think that just secured his election.
Okay. Tommy Bryant, go to meet him. That's Tommy Bryant, joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Amy Walsh is in Fermanagh. Your contribution, please, Amy.
Good afternoon, Joe. How are you?
And tell us, you've been listening to the programme. In one sense, a pretty grim scenario. A lot of people using the phrase civil war. What do you think, Amy?
Well, we left, I'll say that we left after the 2016 election. And we saw the writing on the wall, and my husband was he was employed by the federal government and was in quite a high up position.
Okay.
And he couldn't work and refused to work under a Trump administration. There were circumstances otherwise behind that too, but basically that was the beginning of his retirement, is Trump being elected. Plus, okay, we didn't want our kids growing up in that society, and it changed very quickly. It changed almost overnight after the 2016 election. I can't imagine. I've not been back since and have no desire to go back. So I can't imagine what it's done, you know, in the meantime, between then and now.
I'm talking to your confreres, talking to your friends in the United States in the recent past. What are you hearing, Amy?
Well, Joe, I'll tell you. There are a lot of people, and the situation is slightly different for numerous reasons, but there are a lot of people that look in hindsight at Germany in the 1930s, and it's not a Holocaust. It's not that kind of a takeover. But they ask themselves, I wonder what I would have done if I had been in Germany in 1931, 1932, and I saw the signs of things going on around me. What would I have done? Would I have stayed or would I have left? And I know the answer as far as what I would have done, and it was the best thing that we could have possibly done is to move here. It's better for our kids. It's better for our well-being.
But Amy, was that not part of the issue that was raised? Now, I know it was raised by Mike Johnson and other Republicans in the aftermath of the shooting. Like, comparing Trump to Hitler and fascism is only...
Well, it's more the culture of the country than it is the persona of Hitler. The culture is in rapid decline. It's not the actual activities that are going on in America. It's the culture that is, I've always said, and I still agree with the fact that America spent all this money on arming and policing the world and its military, but America was never ever going to be invaded by an outside army. Okay, America was going to fall from within. And the people and the friends and the loved ones that I've got are filling my inbox literally 10 times a day, asking, how do we move to Ireland? How do we move to the UK? How do we get over there? We're terrified for our kids and for us. And I eventually just end up copying and pasting information, because it's literally, I'm getting asked the same questions over and over again. And in many ways, we feel like we're the lucky ones.
Mm-hmm. And when you say you're copying and pasting information, it is about how to move to Ireland.
Well, yes, and they're desperate. They're desperate. Okay. Who would have ever thought that it would have been that way around, instead of, you know, America's always been the streets of paved with gold, and it's the land of opportunity. It's the land of fear and terror and what's happening next.
Okay,
now, the same.
Okay, Amy, stay with us. Joe at RT.ie. Fiona Whelan Prine is in Nashville in the United States. Fiona, good afternoon. Your contribution, please.
Joe.
How are you? Fiona, tell us, you're listening.
Yes, I have been listening. I've been glued to this conversation, Joe. It's very important that we talk about these things. I couldn't agree more with your previous caller, the lady. The division over here right now is terrifying, and I don't use that word lightly. I think a lot of, when I think back to my 30 years over here, I think it was probably during the Obama administration that I first saw the real ugly face of racism and hatred, and then by extension, inequality, you know? Mm-hmm. I think that was when it first raised its head. One of the distinct things that I remember of 2020, we were all sitting at home watching our TVs because we couldn't be together, and George Floyd was murdered on the streets of Minneapolis by a white cop. And I think that was a defining moment for me. It was a turning point for me over here, in terms of thinking about what does the rest of my life look like. Mm-hmm. And there's so much talk. I mean, of course, Biden's old. Nobody's going to argue with that. He's not going to argue with that. But it's more than Biden, right? When, or even Trump. They appoint an administration around them. And you referred to that earlier, Joe, when you talked about Trump's administration. And sadly, I mean, I don't take any joy in this. Most of them have been convicted or are in prison. Or they have, or as you said, they have turned their back on him. But I have had the opportunity to work a little bit with the Biden administration because he appointed me to the NEA Council on the Arts several years ago. And some of the smartest, brightest, the most compassionate, young, articulate, educated people that I've met mm-hmm. are working in that administration. And I'm sure there was many of those kinds of people also in the Trump administration. But Trump had an opportunity when he got in office to do some of the things that he said he would do. And I think one of the important things that he said he could do and might do, would do, was that he would speak to and he would understand and help the middle America. As my young friend Jesse says, the Joe from Nebraska, as an example, whose family lost the farm. The local factory has been closed down. They have a drug epidemic in their community. His child may finish high school, but will not go to college. And there are so many people like that in America that are left behind. Mm-hmm. Our healthcare system, our education system, the food deserts, as they call them here, racial and social inequality is rampant. So mm-hmm. I don't know that somebody that's as divisive as President Trump is really going to make anything better over here. Biden has certainly tried. He's done mm-hmm. many, many good things. One of your callers said that he had a booming economy and whatever. Well, you know, facts are still facts, in my world at least. And the facts are that Biden has created, he's been one of the most successful presidents in our modern decades. In terms of the lowest employment, he's got inflation down to below 3%. I mean, for those of us who are fortunate and who have good work and can earn money and have our own home, life is very pleasant if you don't read the news or you don't watch TV. Mm-hmm. But all around us, there is destruction, devastation, there's hatred. And it's more than disturbing. It is more than disturbing. It's honestly, I have a small home in Ireland. I feel so grateful. Yeah. And I do see myself there sooner rather than later.
Wow. And Fiona, we spoke before, but a lot of people would know your politics, not just your own campaigning, and I know you're campaigning during COVID as well, and the fact that the death of your late husband, John Prine, who was a superstar in the States, people would have known his general politics as well. Would people be conscious of each other's politics in general conversation, which would not happen here in Ireland?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. It was just one of the things that really struck me when I have some Irish friends here, and of course I have many wonderful American friends. One of the things that struck me, we were talking about it the other evening, when I first came to America 30 years ago, I left an Ireland that was, you know, coming out of some of the dark ages and on the way up. But I didn't realize that I had been so affected by the division between Catholics and Protestants. I did live in Donegal near the border.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't even understand how deeply ingrained it was in my psyche. I was at the gym one day. I see a sports bag sitting in the corner, and I literally broke into a cold sweat and went and reported it. Well, they looked at me like I was a crazy woman. They're like, yeah, it's a sports bag. We're in a gym. And it just struck me, oh, it's not Catholics against Protestants here. It's the division between Black Americans, white Americans, between the 1% rich Americans who own 90% of the wealth and the rest who just struggle to get by. It's between those of us who have good health care, which I am very grateful for, and those who cannot barely afford to make sure that they get their yearly mammograms. It's between the neighborhood that has the nice housing and therefore they pay higher house taxes, like rates, as we used to call them,
mm-hmm.
and those who live in poor areas of the city, urban areas, and in rural areas, where the schools are so bad, children go to school hungry. And this is not, these are not just like single aberrations. This is America today, and it's heartbreaking. It is absolutely heartbreaking because it is not the shining. What was it? Reagan who said, somebody said the shining beacon on the hill.
Mm-hmm.
That's not where I live now.
And from sea to shining sea. Stay with us, Fiona. David yes. Fitzgerald is in New York. David, does this mean Trump's re-election? Donald Trump's re-election?
Hello, Joe. How are you? And I just want to say that Fiona's painting there was a very, very, very doom and gloom. It is some of that. I wouldn't say it's all that here. That's just from my perspective. There is a lot of it. And I also want to say, Joe, people get their information from a few places here. Fox News is where all the... If you know anybody who is a Trump fan, you go into his house, Fox News is on. Yeah. If you go into someone who is a Biden household, CNN is on. And they say whatever they want. The hosts on those channels on Fox News, they treat Donald Trump like the second coming of Jesus Christ. All of them, without exception. And the opposite on CNN. And as far as Donald Trump goes, being elected again, the last time he lost the election, the polls showed him leading, and he lost. The polls show him leading again in some states, or it's 49, 48, it switches between Biden and Trump. I think, you know, when there's such turmoil, it brings out what I would call the people who want to see good prevail. In my opinion, that good would be 100% Joe Biden. That's what I would like to see happen here.
Sorka Highland. Thanks, David. Sorka Highland and Wexford. I'll try and get as many in. Sorka, your contribution, please.
Yeah, I just want to kind of go back to the lady prior to the current speaker from Donegal, who's lived in the States for so long. I think she really hit the nail on the head there in terms of how dangerous and polarized the United States has become. And a lot of the narratives, right back to the gentleman from Butler County there who witnessed the attempted assassination, they paint this very white, idyllic, very stereotyped picture that I think we need to keep in check. Like, I spent nearly 15 years in Lawrence, Kansas, which is in the heart of the Bible Belt, in the middle of the United States, in the Midwest. It has a population smaller than Butler County. I just looked it up there. Butler County is roughly nearly at 200,000. Lawrence, Kansas is currently 95,000.
You were in law enforcement in the States.
For 5 years, I worked for the district court, and I saw what goes on at different levels. So you have a liberal faculty at the university in some degree, but then you have faculty members who are very right wing, who subscribe and to secure their tenure, for example, will sign contracts in departments funded by large corporations like Boeing or in the Midwest, it's in Wichita. But my point, really, what I'm trying to make here is the former President Trump is a king, an autocrat, a totalitarian, an authoritarian, and a dictator. Take your pick.
Okay, Sorka, I'm over time, but that nails your position on that. I really appreciate your contribution. Sorka Highland.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Producer today's Dave Sherry, and Ray Darcy's next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Summer's here. Spruce up your bedroom for less with our sizzling summer sale offers at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.